Chapter 17. What little sleep I got the rest of that fractured night came in snatches, punctuated by dreams of being chased by faceless intruders. By 5 a.m., I could stand no more nightmares. I dragged myself out of bed, slipped into my jeans and a red t-shirt, and staggered downstairs to plug in the old yellow coffee pot. By the time I had washed my face, brushed my hair, and fed Jethro, dawn was a faint glimmer in the east. Surely, if there had been someone outside our house, the gunshot had scared him away. Yet, as I stepped onto the back porch, a feeling of fear met me. Overwrought nerves again. Drat that Jim Clendon. I found myself second-guessing every emotion, wondering if my nerves were playing tricks on me. Did I hear or only feel something stirring? The world lay still in pre-dawn grayness, although the eastern sky promised the sun was back there somewhere, waiting to slip above the horizon. The air felt odd, heavy, and damp as I took a deep breath and tried to banish the jitters. Wispy clouds in the west shone a little lighter than the rest of the sky. Were they harbingers of one of Oklahoma's infamous tornadoes? But it really wasn't warm enough for that. Maybe the woods were on fire farther south. Even though the smoke was not visible, it sometimes added a thickness to the air. I sniffed. No, I couldn't smell wood smoke. Somehow, though, the morning felt different. Perhaps it was the leftover dregs of my scare last night. Or maybe it was all in my sleep-deprived brain. My overwrought brain. Mom had apparently not slept well either. She came out of the house behind me and sniffed. Thought I smelled smoke. You are up early, too. I tell you, Darcy, I don't know what to think about the noise you heard last night. I don't know if all that excitement or this oppressive feeling in the air is what kept me awake. I turned to kiss her cheek, but she was frowning and squinting toward the west. You think a tornado's brewing? She asked. We live right in Tornado Alley, where some of the nation's most vicious storms arrived regularly, especially in the spring and fall. I shook my head. I don't think so. She voiced my own appraisal. Somehow, it just doesn't feel like tornado weather. Something moved in the pasture on the north side of our house. Our neighbor's mule lived there, and recently two saddle horses had arrived to keep him company. The horses trotted to the fence and whinnied softly to us, then suddenly wheeled and tore across the field, heads up and tails streaming behind them, as though a pack of wolves were in hot pursuit. The mule trotted out to meet them and split the morning with his raucous bray. "What's got into them?" Mom asked. "Oh, I'll bet that panther is around. He must be scaring them." Mom groaned. "Oh, no, I forgot to call the neighbors and warn them to keep an eye on their livestock." As we watched, the horses reached the corner of the pasture near the woods and ran straight toward the barbed wire fence, skidding to a stop in the nick of time. They reared and squealed, then raced on down the fence line toward their barn. "I don't know, they seem to be really scared. Maybe that wild cat caught a calf or jumped onto one of the horses." We went down the steps and around the corner of the house to watch such strange behavior on the part of these usually gentle animals. Still squealing, the horses and mule ran into their barn and immediately began to kick the sides of the wooden structure. A loud crash came from the far side of the building. Mom grabbed my arm and pointed. "Look at that, Darcy." Three deer shot out of the woods behind the back pasture and headed toward our garden fence. Deer were common along the river and in the woods behind the pasture, but they didn't usually stray from the cover of trees during the day. This bunch, however, ran with their heads up, white tails flagging an alarm. They sailed over the garden fences with room to spare, one after the other, then flashed across the road and into the brush beyond. A big doe, 50 feet behind the others, tried to jump the fence, stumbled, and fell on the rough garden area. She righted herself, bolted across the garden, sprang over the outside fence, and charged directly toward the road at the front of the house. She did not seem to see the truck headlights that beamed down the road leading to Levi. Mom grabbed my arm. "My lands! That truck's going to hit that poor thing for sure." But the driver saw the doe in time and veered toward the ditch, barely missing her. "I've never seen deer or horses act so crazy for no reason," Mom said. "It must be the panther, but I don't know where it is. I certainly haven't seen it." Looking back in the direction from which the deer had come, I couldn't see anything unusual, and neither Mom nor I had heard the panther's spine-chilling scream. The doe tumbled into the brush, and the lumber truck pulled back onto the road and kept going. 1 second, the truck's headlights beamed a straight path through the murky morning. The next, they jiggled up and down like the scenes in an old movie. Far back in the woods, a cracking sound began and grew into a roar. The trees in the yard shivered as if they felt a sudden chill. The ground shuddered beneath our feet. Everything around us shook as though a high wind were striking the area. Behind the house, something banged and crashed. Glass rattled and splintered with the tinkle of 1,000 icicles. Mom gasped and wheeled back to the porch. She slipped and landed hard on one knee. "It's another earthquake. We better get inside before it gets worse." I dropped down beside her and grabbed her arm. "No, we are better off in the open. Your poor knee, Mom, it's bleeding." I had an unreal feeling of deja vu. The first quake must have been a preview of the coming attraction because this one was a doozy. I heard Mom whispering, "Heavenly Father, protect us." The trembling lasted for perhaps a minute. I hadn't realized I had closed my eyes until it was over. I opened one eye at a time, fully expecting to see our house in shambles. But the home that had stood for 100 years still appeared intact so far as I could see. In the growing light of morning, a filmy cloud drifted over the tops of the trees in the back pasture. Smoke? Dust? Whatever it was, I hoped it didn't signify disaster. Mom struggled to get to her feet. "I've got to take a look around and see how much damage has been done. Let's wait just a little longer. Sometimes aftershocks immediately follow a quake like this." For another 5 minutes, we sat on the ground, expecting to feel the shaking again. An eerie quiet settled over everything, but the earth remained still and solid. As the sky lightened further, we could see a large tree near the corner of our property, lying partly in the road. The big corner fence post leaned toward us, kept from falling only by the wire nailed to it. My voice sounded as shaky as I felt. "I wonder what happened to the truck we saw heading toward town." Cautiously, we got to our feet. Mom gingerly touched her knee. "Do you reckon anything inside the house is broken?" "Well, things look pretty normal from here, but let's walk around the outside first and..." "Oh, no." The house had originally been built with a big chimney on the side that ran up both levels of the structure and extended about 6 feet above the roof to allow escaping embers from the upstairs fireplace to cool before falling onto the flammable roof. But now, instead of the tall, red brick, 4-foot-square chimney, there was only a jagged stump. In the growing light, I could see a few loose bricks lying across the shingles. Several large chunks of red brick were scattered in the yard, 20 feet from the side of the house. The mortar was old and had obviously crumbled, so most of the bricks had broken apart before falling to the ground. A crack ran down one side of the stump that was left intact. A huge chunk had broken off and fallen in against the other side, sending 2 slabs plummeting to the ground. Several small pieces of brick and mortar lay scattered across the yard. A few steps closer, we got an even bigger shock. A pair of jeans-clad legs stuck out from under the biggest chunks. The jeans ended above tan western boots. One foot pointed at the sky, the other pointed downward.